Welcome to episode 125 of Teal and Barber, our Virginia Tech, UVA, and ACC sports podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your favorite pods. I'm Mike Barber, ACC beat writer for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and joining me as always, my co-host, the 14-time Sports Writer of the Year, and the Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, David Teal. David, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Mike. I want to start with a question for you.
I'm ready.
Is this James Madison's biggest heater since the Federalist Papers?
It is a good time to be wearing purple and gold. And obviously, that's your alma mater, my wife's alma mater, at a place I've spent 10 years. And between what the football team's doing on the field, ESPN sending College Game Day there this weekend, and the basketball team's really unbelievable start.
Right, yeah. Cracking the top 25 for the first time in program history.
And you've got football and basketball ranked in the top 25 for James Madison. And not a bad way to go out if you're retiring athletic director Jeff Bourne, huh?
Right. And what a weekend. Both teams are at home. Friday night, the basketball team hosts Radford. And then Saturday for game day, Appalachian State comes calling.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. They've drawn such a huge crowd, David. The two times that game day came in the past, that was when they were an FCS program, over 10,000 people. The estimated crowd's actually over 12,000. It'll be interesting because, you know, so many kids do go home right before the Thanksgiving holiday. It'll be interesting to see what the turnout, what the crowd is like, age demographic wise, but I have a feeling it's going to be a wild and a great scene again in Harrisonburg this weekend.
Oh, I imagine it will be. And, you know, hovering over it all is, will the NCAA do the right thing and grant JMU unconditional bowl eligibility?
Which, do we think that's realistic at this point? Do we still think there's a chance there?
I think there's an outside chance, Mike, if only because it would be such a good PR move. And do they really want 3 hours of game day on Saturday morning railing on the NCAA for this foolishness? Maybe the NCAA doesn't care. Maybe the folks on the board of directors just do not care.
Here's another topic that somebody brought up to me, and I don't know the answer, but you have a race to be, you know, in the Sun Belt championship game. And then if you change the ruling on JMU, you've altered that race. And I had a couple of people ask me, is that fair to other teams that are in the race and would all of a sudden be out of the race? I don't know. Do you think that factors into the thinking at all?
Did those teams play JMU? Yes. Did those teams beat JMU? No. End of discussion.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And to me... I mean, to me, again, and we won't relitigate this, but my outrage is that we're even talking about this in 2023. Yeah. It's been an issue now for 4 years. They should have fixed this a long time ago. It almost feels like they're setting themselves up to fail if they don't come out Wednesday or Thursday and say, okay, we're fixing this, because you're right. That's going to turn into a three-hour infomercial for here's another reason to hate the NCAA, and Jay Billis may make an appearance on football game day for a chance to take a shot at his least favorite governing body. So certainly something to watch. And David, it was something to watch Saturday up in Chestnut Hill, where Virginia Tech, who
Holy
I think
smokes.
We had kind of rightfully buried after they were not competitive at all at Louisville, absolutely dominated a red-hot Boston College team. They win 48-22. Kyron Drones is the ACC quarterback of the week. Dorian Strong, who had a pair of interceptions, is the conference's defensive back of the week. That was the Virginia Tech you want to see, right, David?
Well, Mike, I don't think either of us is surprised that Virginia Tech won the game. I mean, it felt like kind of a coin flip. The Hokies were sure winless on the road, yes, but it wasn't like Boston College had beaten Murderers Row in its five-game winning streak. But 600 yards of offense? Mike, that's the first time since 1993 that Virginia Tech has hung 600 on a Power 5 opponent. And 363 yards rushing? I mean, wow, I did not see. It was 31-7 at halftime. That I don't think either of us saw coming. Clearly, the Hokies' most complete and important performance of the season.
When they opened the year 1-3, if you had said to me, does Virginia Tech get 600 yards of total offense? I would have thought you meant in the remaining games, not in one outing. And we've talked about what Drones has done transforming the offense since he came in at quarterback, the spark that Tootin has brought that offense, the emergence of Daquan Felton, which is even more remarkable when you consider the injury to Ollie Jennings, that it's not somebody else taking away attention and Felton is the beneficiary. He's not the, you know, the Alvin Harper to Michael Irvin running that backside post and there's no safety to help. I mean, this is Felton is the focal point of the downfield passing game and is still getting it done. So, really impressed. And again, impressed because they were so not competitive at Louisville. Yeah. And it felt like maybe the air was out of the tires, you know, the bubble burst, that kind of a thing. And kudos and credit to them and to their coaching staff that ended up just being a bad night in Louisville and got right back on track.
And the coaching staff, who for a noon kick on Saturday decided to shake things up and sent some of the analysts and graduate assistants, you know, into the hotel hallways to wake up the players earlier than they thought they were going to get awakened, just to let them know the urgency of this game and a fast start. And it's pretty wild. It paid off. You know, Andy Bitter and Damian Sortolet, who were up there covering our friends at Tech Sideline in the Roanoke Times, and they wrote about how the players are like, why are our phones ringing? What's all this racket? What the hell's going on? And sure enough, the coaches were getting them out of bed early and let's get rolling. And man, you know, from the first play from scrimmage, when Strong picked off Castellanos, you know, this game was trending toward the Hokies.
Well, that brings us to the next one. Is that one trending towards the Hokies? Because you've got an NC State team that came into the year with really high hopes, was not really able to put it together, has, though, kind of steadied itself and is having a respectable season. And, by the way, Brennan Armstrong back behind center at the quarterback position. What do we make of this matchup Saturday in Blacksburg?
Yet another coin flip, Mike. I can almost guarantee you. In fact, I will guarantee you. Virginia Tech's not going to gain 600 yards Saturday.
Not on that defense.
No, this is a really good defense. I'm not sure it's as good as Louisville's, which just absolutely smothered the Hokies. But with Peyton Wilson at middle linebacker and a shutdown corner like Aiden White and a capable pass rush, NC State leads the league with 20 takeaways, leads the league with 14 interceptions, really stingy against the run. This is going to really be a test for Virginia Tech, as well it should be, because here come the Hokies. They are 5-5 and playing for bowl eligibility. It's senior day. All the trappings, all the stakes. And it is a quality opponent on the other side of the football.
Yeah, it's always going to be, you know, Drake May and Jordan Travis, and rightfully so when you're talking about the best player in the ACC. Peyton Wilson might be the best football player in the ACC, and he's done it for a number of years. He's not an out of nowhere guy. I mean, he is so steady with his tackles. He's so instinctive with his ability to get to the ball. I mean, he's just a tremendous player, and I'm not convinced he's not the best football player. Depending, you know, everybody defines it differently. Is it most valuable to your team, the biggest impact? What would you be without him? But as far as, you know, you tell me who's the best football player in the ACC, that guy might get my vote.
Point well taken. I would certainly think he'll be the ACC defensive player of the year.
I would think.
Whether he can outpoll, say, Jordan Travis for overall player of the year. My presumption is Travis will be the offensive player of the year, quarterback on the presumptive conference champions. And he's had a heck of a year. He's absolutely deserving. But, man, you can make a case for Peyton Wilson.
112 tackles at this point for the guy in the middle of that defense. And it's going to be fun to watch him against a much improved offensive line from Virginia Tech. We mentioned Bashaul Tootin, what he can do. It's going to be an interesting one. It's going to be an interesting matchup. And you know, it's funny because you said coin flip. And I don't know, I always have in my head coin flip is like two even teams. And for me, this one's like more wild card, right? Like, I don't know which Tech we're going to get. I don't know which State we're going to get. Tech at its best against State being off, you know, Tech could do what it did to Boston College and vice versa. State at its best and Tech's a little bit off. But it also does have, you know, the possibility that, hey, what if they both come out, play their best game? And that could be a whale of a ball game. And like I said, like you mentioned, there's some big stakes attached to that one too. And playing at home, you certainly have to think will be an edge for the Hokies. Well, Virginia and the Cavaliers, they're going to play their final two at home. The last one is going to be against those Hokies that we just talked about. But this Saturday, they've got Duke. They've got the Blue Devils, who at one point we thought might challenge for the ACC championship. David, what do you make of this matchup? And, for a Virginia team that is coming off a game at Louisville that was, I think, to both of us, stunningly competitive.
Yes. And I'll tell you what stunned me most. After having watched Louisville's defense blanket Virginia Tech, to watch Anthony Calandria throw for 3+ bills on that group, and Malik Washington to have another huge game, and for them to be a missed DPI call away from really making it interesting on the final drive, man, I was really impressed with the way Virginia played last Thursday down in Louisville. Now, they had two amazingly ill-timed defensive lapses on Louisville's two fourth quarter touchdowns. That can't happen. What was it, a 52-yard run and a 60-some-odd yard pass where guys are just running free, and that's going to bite you every time.
Yeah, that's kind of been the story of Virginia this year, right? That they've really improved and they've really played well, and their breakdowns are catastrophic. Yeah. Their breakdowns are ones you can't come back from, and it's not a hold that backs up a drive and then you make it. It's been these unbelievably big, almost gaffes, whether it's breakdowns defensively, red zone turnovers, just things that if you're fighting for a one score game, and they've played 6-1 score games now, David, and they've only won one of them.
Yeah.
You can't have those. You can't have red zone turnovers. You need points. You can't give up big touchdowns. You've got to make teams earn it down the field. I don't want to move on without addressing the maybe the biggest part, certainly, of that game was the injury to Paris Jones. Very scary moment. He gets carted out of there to the local hospital. At that point, no feeling. And now he's gotten that back. He was even able, our last update from Virginia, he was even able to walk briefly. And he is going through some very difficult rehab. So scary moment. And certainly everyone's thoughts remain with Paris.
Absolutely. That was a terrifying moment. And almost immediately, we got word that, he had movement in his extremities. But then learned that he had spinal surgery and was going to face a really rigorous rehab. I'm sure they'll be playing with him in foremost in their mind on Saturday against a Duke team that comes in a very curious place. You talk about a heart-wrenching loss. They had one Saturday at North Carolina, that's for sure.
Yeah, that game was wild, and I'll be honest, I fell asleep before it went to overtime. I was exhausted, so that wasn't a commentary on the game in any way, shape, or form. I had every intention of watching it, and I woke up and kind of did I don't know if it's still called the DVR when you have Hulu, but the recording of the game, rewatched the fourth quarter and the overtime. But what Mike Elko has done with that program is remarkable. And I know there's some chatter and smoke about, will he be a target for Texas A&M? He certainly indicated his happiness, his family's happiness there in Durham with what they're doing. But obviously Texas A&M has The kind of money that can that can buy even more happiness. I know that's not the conventional wisdom or the expression, but David, what they've done at Duke, and considering 6-4 despite what they've dealt with at the quarterback position with the injury to Riley Leonard and him being in and out, really remarkable. And I think for Virginia fans, a little, I don't know if angst is the word, but you know what Mike Elko has done in the same time period versus what Tony Elliott has done. And mm-hmm. you know, Tony, obviously, there was that very awkward where he kind of put it out there that he had, according to him, had picked the Virginia job over Duke. There was some clap back from some people at Duke who indicated that maybe he had never been actually offered the Duke job. But this is, I think, a big moment for him and for Virginia. The close games are great. The improvement is encouraging. But you need to get a win, I think, in this one to really have any kind of positivity going into the offseason.
Mike, and let's be clear, Mike Elko took over a program in far worse shape
than
Tony Elliott did.
Yes, sir. Yeah, right? And it, yeah, 100%. And it's been remarkable what he's done. So it's not as if, you know, it's run of the mill and everybody said, well, why didn't that happen here? Mike Elko's transformation at Duke has been just off the charts impressive with what he's been able to do both sides of the ball. I mean, really making that defense one of the best defenses in the conference almost instantaneously upon arriving. And so, yeah, there is that sense of, okay, if they could do it from that point, why right. couldn't we do it? And,
and that being said, Mike Elko didn't have to deal with what Tony Elliott dealt with for the last 12 months.
Correct. There's certainly, as you look at the year two part of it, you know, something at Virginia that nothing can compare to, I always say there's no preparation for that. But David, like I said, they've got Duke at home. Then Virginia Tech, who based on their last game, certainly is a daunting opponent. What does Virginia need to do to go into the offseason with some momentum? And is it win one of these two, or is that too big an ask?
I don't think it's too big of an ask at all. But to have any kind of momentum going into the offseason, yes. Need to win another game. I mean, 2-10. I mean, that's Bronco Mendenhall's first year. Right, that's what they were when he took mm-hmm. over in 2000. What was it, 15? Do I have that year right?
Yeah, his first year they won two games, and yeah. then they were the really impressive, I thought, steady progression. Right, mm-hmm. they just got a little bit better and a very tangible step every year. It was a bowl game, but they got blown out. Then it was a bowl game, but they won. Then it was an ACC Coastal Championship and an Orange Bowl, and mm-hmm. then obviously the pandemic and things kind of plateaued and fell off a bit. But I think that's the model. If you're a fan of what you want to see from Tony Elliott, is growth and steady growth and. You referenced, you know, the shooting and the tragedy, and I think that changes the timeline, but it doesn't change what you want to see in terms of trajectory. And another win, being competitive, you don't want another Georgia Tech, right? The Georgia Tech loss and how lopsided it was, to me, mm-hmm. it changed a lot of the narrative of where things are.
It did. And that narrative could have changed had they closed the deal Thursday night, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was sitting there, well, Thursday night I was watching Virginia Tech Iowa women in Charlotte. And by the way, Caitlin Clark, if you ever get the chance, oh my gosh, goes without saying, break the bank and go see her play. But I was texting with our pal Greg Medea. I'm like, dude, when Virginia was coming back, when's the last time a team won two games in the same season on the road as a 20-plus point underdog? Because that's the way it was looking.
It was starting to feel like Tony Elliott was going to be this year's Brent Key, right?
Yes.
Where you get those big eye-opening yes. wins. And yeah, you look at the rest of the schedule, and you're like, well, how did that happen, or why'd you lose that? But enough of those wins that there was that so much positivity, enough for Brent, obviously, to have that interim tag lifted and become the full-time coach. And with Tony, you just felt like, man, if they get Carolina and Louisville on the mm-hmm. road right? and being huge underdog, that no matter what else, you can say, okay, they've got something going here that is and I don't know. Does losing a close game, does it wipe all that away? No, but does it wipe away a lot of that feeling? It does.
Yeah, it really does. Because you know, we're all judged on results, man. And Tony Elliott understands that, and his players understand that. Got to close, and they haven't figured out how to.
Yeah, they've given up the most points in the ACC this season, and that's a surprise, David, because that defense was pretty good and kept them in some games a year ago. And I think we thought that's be where they hang their hat, and just hasn't completely come together. And that's why, you know, they're one of four teams there with just one conference win at the bottom of the standings. Let's take a look at the, maybe not the top, because I think Florida State, Florida State's got the sole rights there up at the top at 8-0 and 10-0 overall, and clearly the class of the league. Louisville, by holding on, though, I mean, they stay right in that second spot. They're 6-1 in the conference. They're 9-1 overall. And then you got a cluster of teams at 4-2 that include that North Carolina team, and they include the two teams playing Saturday, NC State, Virginia Tech. So as you look at it, is Louisville your pick to end up in that number two position and to play the Seminoles in the ACC championship game?
Yes, I think Louisville will beat Miami on Saturday, and that will close the deal. And at that point, Mike, if Louisville makes the ACC championship game, only two teams in the league will have never reached the ACC championship game, and that would be Syracuse and NC State.
That's some trivia that both of those fan bases would like to see change.
No doubt.
So you've got Louisville beating Miami. Miami is another one of those absolute wild card teams. Could Miami put it together? They're going back to Tyler Van Dyke at quarterback.
Williams got hurt.
Right.
Williams got hurt there late against FSU.
And then it was funny to hear Mario Cristobal talk about just heaping praise on Tyler Van Dyke, which I have to imagine in some degree rings a little hollow when you've benched the guy, but he talked about being, you know, the ultimate competitor and warrior and all those things. You know, Van Dyke's interesting. You think about Tyler Van Dyke. You think about Phil Jurkovic, who's playing tight end now. You think about Brennan Armstrong. I mean, and I guess Devin Leary of that group. Devin Leary has been the most successful, but we had that crop of quarterbacks that year that looked like they were going to be, you know, absolute, you know, world beaters for the next year or two. It's kind of remarkable how they've all fallen off.
Yeah, really, it really hasn't panned out. Drake May sure has, but I mean, he's compounded things and stamped himself a first or, you know, top two, top three NFL draft pick. Although he wasn't part of that 2020 year or 2021 right. year, but yeah, Armstrong hasn't panned out. And, you know, you talk about a guy who didn't sulk after he was benched. Well, this is Dave Dorn's direct quote, by the way. So don't get me in trouble with the pod police. But he said Brennan Armstrong handled it when they benched him in favor of MJ Morris, handled it, quote, like a grown-ass man, close quote. And it has served Armstrong well because now he's back under center, and he looked pretty darn good winning at Wake Forest on Saturday. And, you know, you can dismiss that win all you want, but you ask any NC State fan and they will tell you that place is their little shop of horrors. And some really good Wolfpack teams have gone there and lost. And they were just relieved to get out of there with a win. And Brennan Armstrong was a primary reason. He rushed for almost 100 yards.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because, you know, I think you and I both like Brennan, enjoyed our time with him, kind of root for him and, you know, wouldn't mind seeing him play real well here down the stretch and kind of change a little bit of the narrative of his season and his career. They're going to have a chance because, you know, North Carolina has a brutal end to the schedule at Clemson and then at NC State. I think Armstrong, assuming he's still under center for that game, you know, there's a chance for that to kind of be the legacy he leaves at NC State if he plays well in that one against Drake May. And I think that's a chance to be a really interesting ball game. But, you know, I'm with you on Louisville. I think they get it done against Miami. I think Carolina is the second best team in the ACC. But those back-to-back losses, right, to Virginia and Georgia Tech, almost inexplicable. And then the way the season ends at Clemson and at NC State. Yeah.
Fascinating just games, though, right, Mike?
Yeah.
I mean, Clemson's on the uptick. You know, they spanked Georgia Tech on Saturday, and, you know, we were we were wondering aloud whether Clemson was going to get bowl eligible when they were sitting there at 4-4. But you know, now they've beaten Notre Dame, and they've beaten Georgia Tech, and now they got Carolina. And then they play the other Carolina to close the regular season. It's not out of the realm that Tigers finish 8-4.
No, not at all, because things have gone south on South Carolina and Shane Beamer a bit. And, that North Carolina, man, if North Carolina, though, and ifs and what's, that expression, but if North Carolina had taken care of business against Georgia Tech and Virginia, that Clemson North Carolina game would just be, because I think Clemson is, maybe right there with Carolina as the next best team, and now that they're putting it together. But again, it's, and rightfully so, right? It rewards what you've done in terms of consistency week in, week out. And you can't slip up against a Virginia or a Georgia Tech. You can't have an inexplicable loss to Pittsburgh. Those are the things that puts you kind of behind the eight ball, and more credit to Mike Norvell and Florida State for not having that, right? They've had some games that were competitive, but they've taken care of business and are undefeated and clearly the class of the league.
I think they're going to be okay against North Alabama Saturday.
You think so? You don't think that's a trap game?
No.
You know who gets trapped in that game is North Alabama. That's where the trap lies. Well, David, it's also basketball season, and we don't want to get too deep into that because it is the heart of the football playoff push here. But Virginia, a pretty encouraging, I thought, win down in Charlotte. You and I were there to take that in. They beat Florida 73-70 in a game that I think its value was it's how close it was and how they were tested. And that's for a new look roster and a rebuilt roster. You can say all you want about character and what you've seen in practice and what you've done, backwards scouting these guys, talking to their coaches. You really don't know what you have until the rubber meets the road, so to speak. And I think if you're Tony Bennett, you had to like what you saw in that case.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And it was my first time seeing them. Mike, you had seen the opener against Tarleton State. Blake Buchanan, I was like, dang. And it wasn't even that he led them in scoring and rebounding. It was his defense. And the way that young man moved his feet and got his arms extended and became that wall when he was hedging ball screens or when he was helping somebody trap the post. It's like for a kid in his second college game, Tony Bennett's got to like that. And when we asked him post game, has he been as quick a study defensively as it appeared tonight? And Tony immediately said, oh, yes. And I saw it in the scrimmages. So clearly, this is a young man who came into the program with a solid defensive foundation.
Yeah, Tony told us at Media Day and a few other times this preseason that Buchanan is what he likes to call continuous, right?
Yes.
He's always moving. He's getting to spots. He's active. And that is, in Bennett's mind, kind of the first component of being great in the pack line defense. Can you be on that end, locked in for the entire possession, moving and getting around and being active and getting the spots? And Buchanan has that. He has great agility for a guy who's 6'11", 225. He has a tenacity and a toughness. And David, I thought he showed something with the free throw shooting. He went 10 for 16 at the line. It ended up being almost a hack-a-shack defense there at the end.
Right.
He was 1 for his first 5. And then closed it out 9 for his last 11 at the free throw line, which you don't always see that from anybody, let alone a freshman.
Freshman big.
You're having a bad night at the line. You're not necessarily a great free throw shooter to begin with. You're not having a great night at the line, and you get sent there and sent there and sent there and in key spots, right, David? Because that was a one or two possession game really for the duration of those free throws that he was taking. The fact that he shook off the struggles to knock his free throws down in the back half of that game, I thought was really, really impressive.
Agreed. There's nothing like late game pressure to reveal things about players. And hey, it's November. It's not conference season. It's not postseason. But that's really encouraging. And we have no way of knowing what kind of pressure situations he's attempted free throws in previously, but a very encouraging start. Now, Mike, we cannot discuss this game without delving into what you wrote about afterward and that nearly broke the internet, and that's Corey Alexander and Tony Bennett and Lee Cassell. I'll let you lead off because I have thoughts.
Well, the first thing I would say is maybe somebody should have told Tony that it's only November, because the reaction there was not one of a non-conference November game. So in short, what happened, you had a possession late in the game. You had two players, one from Florida and Blake Buchanan from Virginia, going for a ball near the sideline. It's unclear in real time to the officials, I think, what had happened, who the ball went off of. So they go to the review. Initially, they point to Virginia. They go to the review monitors. They confirm it, and they say Virginia ball. They come back, and they bring the ball, David, to the sideline for Virginia to inbound it. And all of a sudden, the officials start walking towards the ACC network crew on that side of the court. There's a conversation there, and Corey Alexander, who is a Virginia all-time great, turns around his monitor, shows them a different angle of the replay, and on the broadcast, you can hear Corey inches from their faces quite loudly breaking it down and saying, clearly this is Florida's ball, and breaking the play down essentially for them. Lee Cassell, the referee, turns around, blows the whistle, and says, now it's Florida's ball. Tony Bennett about loses it, charges onto the court, about halfway onto the court, and he's screaming across the court, not at the officials, but at Corey Alexander, saying, do your job, do your job, to the point that Ryan Dunn, a Virginia player, is pulling Tony Bennett back and told us afterward that he was telling Tony, hey, control what you control, go on to the next play, which is the thing that the coach is supposed to be telling the angry player.
So classic.
What an amazing juxtaposition. And but David, fans of Virginia are livid with Corey Alexander. They feel like he overstepped. What's your take on this mess?
Okay. I have lots of takes on this. Number one, I think, and this is a generalization, this isn't the case for all, but TV talent and referees are far too cozy and far too friendly. That's number one. Number two, if Lee Cassell wants another look at this play, if he didn't think what he saw at the scores table was enough, then he, of his own volition, and this is well within the rules, he should have gone to the TV crew and asked, did you get a better, did you get a better look at it? And that's fine. But he shouldn't have said to Corey Alexander, did we get it right? And then Corey, that's not in his place to tell them whether they got it right. At that point, he's got to divorce himself from it. So I don't think anyone distinguished themselves here. And I don't think Tony Bennett did either. And I think he would tell you that. And let's take this to another layer, Mike. This is personal with Corey Alexander and Tony Bennett. Corey Alexander has wanted to be on the Virginia staff for a long time, and he has not been hired. And that's a part of this that that people talk about, but they don't really say out loud. But it is, and there is tension between the two of them.
Yeah, I had the chance to speak with Corey after he called the Virginia Tech game later that night. So I had a chance to talk to him after that, and his version of events was that he was just calling the game and that Lee Cassell, the referee, asked him, did you get it right? And he said to me, all I did was tell him the truth. No. And then Lee asked, do you guys have a better angle? And Corey said, all I did was tell him the truth. Yeah, we have a better angle. When you watch the TV snippet, the TV replay of it, there's some question about that narrative to begin with, about how that initiated and why fans were so upset. Corey, told me and showed me, he exchanged texts with Tony Bennett later after kind of the dust had settled and cleared the air, but it is an interesting dynamic. And it does make me wonder if the ACC Network and ESPN are, in a sense, doing everyone a disservice by assigning him UVA games, right? Like, is that a good fit for Corey Alexander specifically?
Well, you can. I don't have a problem with that, but you know, let's do full disclosure here. I'm a JMU graduate. I write about JMU occasionally. Jay Billis is a Duke graduate. He's all over Duke games. You know, this stuff happens. You know, Joe Tessitore, his son was a player at Boston College, and Joe Tess is doing BC football games where his son is on the field. There are some interesting dynamics at work, not to get too inside baseball, but you know, in the media biz.
Yeah. I just wonder, I'll be curious the next time Corey is assigned to a UVA game, right?
If it's a JPJ,
it has the potential to be uncomfortable. And
it
that's
does,
where,
dude.
Yeah. And that's where I think that maybe, you know, the best play here is to just find some other assignments. There's plenty of other games on the ACC network. Maybe UVA ones aren't the way to go here down the stretch. Well, I mentioned that Virginia Tech then played the late game. David, they end up losing to South Carolina, a game that I thought kind of showed some weakness in the Hokies. Maybe a little more 3-point reliant and not as much other options as I think maybe I hoped they had. Lynn Kidd still seems to be an emerging talent in the post. But what did you make of Virginia Tech's loss?
I thought they were really disappointing defensively.
Yeah.
South Carolina shot almost 60% overall and from three and didn't commit many turnovers. I mean, for Virginia Tech, you know, its offensive metrics were fine. Couldn't get a stop when they needed to. And, you know, that's something that Mike Young preached during, you know, October. We're going to be better defensively. We've devoted more practice time to it. I promise you, I think it was 139th in defensive efficiency last year. That's inexcusable. We're going to be better. Well, Friday night in Charlotte, they were not better. And now, is South Carolina improved from last season, and did it make a whole bunch of upgrades through the portal, especially with guys like BJ Mack? Absolutely. But to me, I came away thinking, okay, they still got some work to do on the defensive end. I mean, Padula, you know, he had a career high 26. He played, you know, on the offensive side, he played really well, but he couldn't get a stop.
Now, as you referenced when we were talking about the Tony and Corey flap, it is only November. They've got time to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we both have a lot of confidence in Mike Young to do it. I think the pieces are there, David. Of course, that was the storyline last year, right? They felt like they had an NCAA tournament caliber team and just never quite got it together. You don't want that in back-to-back years. But it feels like the pieces are there, and certainly there's plenty of time to figure this thing out in Blacksburg.
Oh, yeah. And you know, they have a really interesting MT, multi-team event, tournament, call it what you will. I know you're going to Fort Myers for Virginia's event next week. Mm-hmm. But Virginia Tech is really interesting. The field is stacked. You know, people will look and say, oh, we're playing Boise State. That'd be a better football game. Well, no. Boise State was in the NCAA tournament last year as an at-large, by the way. Mountain West team. That earned a bid, you know, and then the rest of the field, you know, includes VCU and includes Penn State, includes Texas A&M. You know, the Hokies could end up seeing buzz down there, depending on how the bracket falls. It's a real quality field down in Orlando.
Who doesn't want to see buzz at the holidays? Isn't that the dream?
You'll have your chance, bro.
I'm not bitter. I get to see that game here in Charlottesville. So the reunion will happen. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to all of these games. Well, thanks for listening. You can subscribe to Teal and Barber on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite pods. And please consider supporting local journalism with an online subscription to the TD. You can find special promotional offers available at richmond.com. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer and yours truly. Teal and Barber is a podcast of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening. Be healthy and safe. And please join David and me again next time.